picked up the phone and called us. And we then...
Madam Clerk, will you please lock the roll and tally the board?
36 members present.
We do have a quorum present to conduct business. Our chaplain today is the Reverend Wayne Coggins of the Cornerstone Ministry. Will members please rise for the invocation?
Our Heavenly Father, there are some new faces in the legislature this year, and most likely 2 years from now there will be some more. And it's a bit sobering to think that in a generation or so, all the faces and names on the voting board will have changed, and the torch of leadership in Alaska will have passed. But for now, Lord, it is our turn to step up to the plate and do our best. Help us to have an awareness of the lessons of history, a perceptive eye to the future, and a clear vision of the challenges and opportunities facing Alaska at the present. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Reverend Coggins. Representative Ivan, would you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Terrio?
Of yes.
Spread the prayer.
Oh.
You were standing.
Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that this prayer be spread upon the journal.
That objection, the prayer will be spread across the journal. Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, may the record reflect that Representatives Dyson and Hodgins have been previously excused from the call of the House today, but that Representative Hodgins is with us, and that because of weather, I would move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Coring's previously excused absence be extended until ferry time 10:45 this evening.
Without objection, Representative Coring will be shown as excused. Clerk, please certify the journal for the previous legislative day.
I certify the correctness of the journal for the 22nd and 23rd legislative days and Senate and House Joint Journal Supplement Number 5.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move and ask unanimous consent to the House Journal and Supplemental Journal as certified by the clerk be approved.
Without objection, the House Journals will stand approved. This brings us down to introduction of guests. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In the Warren Taylor Gallery, we have a fine bunch of young ladies and gentlemen. Happen to be Mary Becker and John Wall's sixth grade students from Zonkakahini Middle School, and if they would all stand and we could give them a hand and welcome them here, I expect many of them someday to be sitting on this very floor.
Further guests for introduction, Representative Croft.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The invocation talked about new faces and old faces and names that have changed on the board. It gives me a lot of pleasure to introduce an old face, but the same name, in the Paratrovich Gallery. I thought a lot about what I would say. I could speak a lot about legislation he's been responsible for, other things I'm proud of him for, but he knows as well as anyone that this is a busybody, so I'd just like to introduce my father, my best friend, Chancey Croft.
Representative Croft. Former Representative and Senator Croft, as a former member of this body, it would give us great pleasure to offer you the privilege of the floor.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. It's a pleasure that I'm here today. I will say, though, that it was a little bit of a shock to see the name Croft and have somebody vote without my right hand. Here two or three weeks, and already they look
Thank you very much, Senator Croft. Further guests for introduction, Representative Mulder.
New faces in the legislature. In the Taylor Gallery, I have a new staff person working for me this year, but it's not only his first year down here, it's also his birthday today. I'd like to have you join me in welcoming and congratulating Matt Gill.
Further guests, Representative Terrio.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In the Paratrovich Gallery, I have a close friend, a former staffer. She and I worked for then-Representative Miller back in the 80s. She now works for the American Heart Association. She's down from Fairbanks, and she happens to be the mother of my two godchildren. Her name is Terry Sterl.
Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In the Paratrovich Gallery, I'd like to introduce one of my inspirations, I guess, in the issue of education, a member of the State Board of Education, Robert Gottstein.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. As one of the older-looking faces in the House, actually, I'm 29 years old, but I'm on my fourth year here, and so this is what happens to you when you've been down here too long. It gives me great pleasure in the Paratrovich Gallery to introduce the Executive Director of the Heart Association, who is a constituent of mine and a very good friend, Suzanne Cunier, would you please rise and help me welcome.
Further guests, Representative Hodgins.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have a guest today in the Petrovich Gallery, and that would be Bernie Smith, and he is with Tesoro and a good constituent and a good pro-development Alaska. Can help.
Representative Nicolai.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I too have some very special guests here today. The first one is a guest page. He's a junior in high school at Takotna Charter School. I'm Brian John. This is his first trip to Juneau, and so he's very excited to be here. The other people that I have is Bart Maury in the Paratrovich Gallery. He's a principal at the Takotna Community School and Charter School. And these two people were the people that started the Charter School in Takotna and are a great inspiration to those people in that community and to the people in the along the Kuskokwim River. Dick Newton, who's the chair of the Takotna Community Association and could rise them. And he's also the chair of the Academic Policy Committee for the Takotna Community School and Charter School. Jan Newton, who's the vice chair of the Iditarod School District and is also the tribal administrator for Takotna Tribal School, Takotna Tribal Council. And please help me welcoming them to Juneau. Thanks.
Further guests for introduction? This brings us down to communications. Do we have communications from the governor?
No, Madam Speaker.
Communications from the other body?
There are no messages from the other body.
We have reports of standing committees. Do we have communications?
We received a report from the Alaska Commercial Fishing and Agricultural Bank and a report on the Oil and Hazardous Substance Release Prevention Response Fund annual report. I have no further communications.
Reports of standing committees?
We received the Rules Committee report regarding the Ethics Decision H-9602, recommending Dupas, Cott, Chair, Phillips, Porter, V.Z. Williams, do not pass, Elton, and Nicolai.
This report will be taken up under unfinished business today. Mr. Majority Leader?
Madam Speaker, I would move and ask unanimous consent that the report of the Rules Committee be printed as a supplement to the journal.
Without objection, the Rules Committee report will be printed as a supplemental to the journal. Further standing committee reports?
The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 1, Cigarette and Tobacco Tax, recommending be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 1, State Affairs, with the same title, attaches a fiscal note, recommending do pass James Elton, Berkowitz, Ivan, do not pass VZ. The report was signed by James Chair. House Bill 1 has a further referral to the HES Committee. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 20, Dog Mushing Contest, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 20, Finance, with the same title, recommending do pass Foster, Mulder, Davis, Grusendorf, Davies, Moses, do not pass Martin and Kelly, no recommendation, Hanley, Ontario. The report was signed by Hanley, Ontario, co-chairs. House Bill 20 has no further referral. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Bill 31, Civil Liability for Improper Litigation, attaches two fiscal notes, recommending do pass Sanders, Ryan, and Calderi. No recommendation, Bryce and Hudson. The report was signed by Calderi, Vice Chair. House Bill 31 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 35, Extend Regional Economic Assistance Program, recommending do pass Jewel, Ogun, Sanders, Kukish, Ryan, and Ivan. A fiscal note was attached. The report was signed by Ivan, Chair. House Bill 35 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee has considered House Bill 66, Approved Centralized Public Health Lab, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 66, passed with the same title, attaches three fiscal notes and 1-0 fiscal note, recommending do pass Green, Bundy, Kimplin, do not pass VZ and Bryce. The report was signed by Bundy, Chair. House Bill 66 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 86, Cities Payments in Lieu of Taxes, attaches a zero fiscal note, recommending do pass Jewel, Sanders, Ryan, Kukish, Ivan. No recommendation, Ogun. The report was signed by Ivan, Chair. House Bill 86 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Madam Speaker.
Do we have reports on special committees?
The House Special Committee on Fisheries has considered House Bill 25, Fishing Game Licenses and Residency, recommends, attaches 2-0 fiscal notes, recommending do pass Ogun and Osterman. No recommendation, Kabina and Ivan. The report was signed by Osterman, Chair. House Bill 25 has a further referral to the Resources Committee. I have no further special committee reports.
Do we have citations or resolutions today for introduction?
Citation honoring Lorena Jones by Representative Ivan and Senator Hoffman, honoring members of the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics by Representative Berkowitz, Croft, and Kimplin, honoring University of Alaska Fairbanks TRIO programs by Representative Bryce, in memoriam Wassily Nagtak by Representative Ivan and Senator Hoffman, in memoriam Grace Akiyama by Representative Hudson and Elton and Senator Duncan, in memoriam Howard Myhill by Representative Phillips, in memoriam Dale M. Van Sant by Representative Phillips, in memoriam Rudolph Rudy Wilson by Senator Ward and Representative Hodgins, in memoriam Douglas Doner by Senator Lehman. I have no further citations or resolutions for introduction.
We have bills today for introduction.
House Bill 114 by the House Health, Education, and Social Services Committee by request entitled An Act Relating to Healthcare Data and Registration of Births.
That'll be referred to the HES Committee.
House Bill 115 by the House Rules Committee by request of the Legislative Council entitled An Act Making a corrective amendments to the Alaska statutes as recommended by the reviser of statutes and providing for an effective date.
And that'll be referred, oh, sorry.
A sectional analysis was attached and will appear in a supplement.
That'll be referred to the Judiciary Committee.
House Bill 116 by Representatives Scott, Hudson, Foster, Berkowitz, Hodgins, Kelly, Dyson, Davis, and Phillips, entitled An Act Relating to Workers' Compensation Self-Insurance.
And that'll be referred to Labor and Commerce.
I have no further bills for introduction.
That brings us down to consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
House Bill 2 by Representatives Cotton, Mulder, Covina, Martin, Davies, Williams, and Hudson, entitled An Act Allowing for the Purposes of Permanent Fund Dividend Eligibility an Individual to Accompany as the Spouse or Minor or Disabled Dependent another eligible resident who is absent for any of the following reasons: vocational, professional, or other specific education for which a comparable program is not reasonably available in the state, secondary or post-secondary education, military service, medical treatment, service in the Congress or in the Peace Corps to care for the individual's terminally ill parent, spouse, sibling, child, or stepchild for up to 220 days to settle the estate of the individual's deceased parent, spouse, sibling, child, or stepchild, to care for a parent, spouse, sibling, child, or stepchild with a critical life-threatening illness whose treatment plan as recommended by the attending physician requires travel outside of the state for treatment at a medical specialty complex or other reasons that the Commissioner of Revenue may establish by regulation requiring for the purposes of permanent fund dividend eligibility a state resident to have the intent to remain indefinitely relating to the eligibility for 1992, 93, 94, 95, 96, and 97 permanent fund dividends of certain spouses and dependents of eligible applicants and providing for an effective date. The Finance Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 2 Finance with the same title attached to fiscal note, recommending do pass Terrio, Martin, Coring, Davies, Grusendorf, Davis, Kelly, Foster, Hanley, Mulder. No recommendation, Moses. The report was signed by Terrio and Hanley, co-chairs. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for HB 2 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Finance Committee substitute is adopted. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would then move and ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for HB 2 Finance be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we are in third reading. Would the clerk please read the title for the third and final time?
CS for House Bill 2 Finance by the House Finance Committee, entitled An Act Allowing for the Purposes of Permanent Fund Dividend Eligibility an Individual to Accompany as a Spouse or Minor or Disabled Dependent another eligible resident who is absent for any of the following reasons: vocational, professional, or other specific education for which is comparable program is not reasonably available in the state, secondary or post-secondary education, military service, medical treatment, service in the Congress or in the Peace Corps to care for the individual's terminally ill parent, spouse, sibling, child, or stepchild for up to 220 days to settle the estate of the individual's deceased parent, spouse, sibling, child, or stepchild, care for a parent, spouse, sibling, child, or stepchild with a critical life-threatening illness whose treatment plan, as recommended by the attending physician, requires travel outside of the state for treatment at a medical specialty complex or other reasons that the Commissioner of Revenue may establish by regulation requiring for the purposes of permanent fund dividend eligibility a state resident to have the intent to remain indefinitely relating to the eligibility for 1992, 93, 94, 95, 96, and 97 permanent fund dividends of certain spouses and dependents of eligible applicants and providing for an effective date.
Debate? Are you Representative Cott?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I suppose this falls in the category of if you don't first succeed, try again. That's certainly what I've been doing with this particular measure. I think many of you in this body are familiar with this particular issue. It has been before us in the past. Just to benefit those that are perhaps not familiar with it, prior to 1993, there was a court decision, actually in December of 1993, that had an effect of removing the piggyback provision. Prior to this court decision, if a person was on one of the allowable absences, as determined by this body and the department, then their family was also considered on that allowable absence. When that court decision was rendered in 93, the effect was this. If a member was on an allowable absence, for instance, a student, and they were accompanied out of state by their spouse, their spouse then was not on the allowable absence. The piggyback provision, which was in statute, was essentially removed and no longer allowable under the regulations as applied and the perspective as applied by the Division of Permanent Fund. So, Madam Speaker, what this bill does is to restore the piggyback provision and thus making those spouses that accompany their spouse on allowable absence eligible to receive the permanent fund. It does have a retroactive provision where it makes everyone whole that has been adversely affected by the 93 court decision. So it really accommodates upwards to perhaps 7,000 individuals that may be affected. It's hard to really come to grips with the exact number. We do know there are about 10 to 12,000 applications. I would submit that many of those applications over the 4 or 5 years have been filed by the same individual, so it's really hard to gauge the exact number that are affected, but I would estimate somewhere in the neighborhood 5 to 7,000 potentially. This would also have an effect on the permanent dividend, future permanent dividend of approximately $10 to $11. Again, I must remind the body that in the past, dividends have been larger as a result of these individuals being excluded. So this is no more than somewhat coming up with an equitable solution to a past problem. Thank you.
Further debate? Representative Mulder.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. No doubt to me, Madam Speaker, this is an issue of equity and fairness. As the previous speaker had mentioned, prior to December of 1993, these individuals were eligible to receive the permanent fund dividend, and it was commonly accepted practice that they were as much Alaskans as you or I. Then a judge intervened, Madam Speaker, and ruled that a regulation was no longer appropriate and compelled the legislature to act on it. But as we all know, Madam Speaker, it's easier to stop legislation than it is to pass it. I believe, Madam Speaker, that the time has come to correct that wrong. I think indicative of how unjust this law is, or how unjust the current law is, and what we're trying to remedy, Madam Speaker, we've all heard about the incident, or incidents, the fact that our own congressional delegation's spouses do not today receive the permanent fund dividend, and have not since that point in time. It's time that we correct this injustice, Madam Speaker, and make them whole again. I don't believe, Madam Speaker, that this is abusing or expanding the realm of eligibility or the pool beyond what those people who we've always considered to be Alaskans, we've just made certain that under the law they are protected and are, in fact, considered to be Alaskans. I also think, Madam Speaker, this takes a step to once again protect the family unit in an offhand way. What the judge's decision did was say that we're going to protect the individual who's gone and the children, however, we're not going to protect that spouse. And I don't think that's right, because that doesn't do anything to protect the family unit, Madam Speaker. And in essence, what we're doing today is restoring that confidence. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further debate? Representative Grusendorf.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker. When this was before the Finance Committee, I did vote do pass. But there is a section in here that does concern me and several other representatives, and that's on page 3, section 3, where they change the word permanently to indefinitely. And this was a department's recommendation that permanent be replaced and put in there indefinitely. And that causes problems with me, because when a person gets a permanent fund application, when you say you intend to be a permanent resident of Alaska, that means something more than do you plan to be here indefinitely? Because we have a lot of people that are coming into this state for indefinite periods of time, depending upon how long a particular construction project would be it the gas pipeline later in the future or whatever project it is, and they are here indefinitely. They don't know how long. But when it says permanent, it means something to the person reading it, where they say, well, yeah, I'm going to be here, but I'm not going to be here permanently. I'm not going to, you know, invest myself to that degree. And when questioned why the department, it was not the sponsor of the bill that did this, the department said, I asked them, well, why did you change it to indefinitely? Well, they said, well, it's a more liberal interpretation. And I said, well, liberal with whose money? And this still bothers me, Madam Speaker. I don't think that that was a good suggestion for an amendment by the department. Permanent means a little bit more to the reader. The term is called a permanent fund, not the indefinite fund. And when we wanted to come up with the idea that it was a permanent situation, it was going to be there into perpetuity. And we did run this amendment out, and it did not fare very well. And therefore, I'm sure the representative to my left here did not decide to run it out again. But it's something I all want you to think about, because the department said for a more liberal interpretation. Well, that may sound good, but it certainly did not satisfy me. So thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Terrio, Representative Hanley, Representative Cott, and Representative Mulder, please come forward and House stand at ease. Turn off my mic. Further debate, Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to associate my remarks with my colleague from District 23. Madam Speaker, in years past when I was in this body, I think this subject came up, and we've always had the big debate about who should receive it, what allowable absences are. It doesn't appear as though that's a problem anymore, but it certainly is proper that we give the equitable share of every Alaska resident who is accompanying someone, for example, our U.S. Senator or U.S. Congressman, or a veteran that might be stationed outside the state of Alaska, his or her equitable share. And so I would urge all members to vote for this bill.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I just have a couple of questions. In one case, I'm addressing the representative from Sitka, who indicated that he was not in favor of the word indefinitely. And what I would suggest is that, having kind of looked back through this, not having heard it this time, but remember when we heard it last year, that in AS 110.055, under residency requirements, they use the word indefinitely in their definition. So I think what this probably does is make our statutes a little more consistent. So I would certainly support that. My question, and I would appreciate the maker of the bill to explain how they're going to be sure that if they pay back through 1992 forward to some people, and they maybe can't find others, how much energy will they expend trying to find those people who would normally, if this passes, be entitled to back payment, but they can't find them? Either they've left the service or something like that. And if they don't spend a lot of energy, are we at risk for prejudicially paying some and not paying others?
Further debate, Representative Cott.
That's an interesting question. Appreciate it. I'll try to give my best response. In response, the department will attempt to locate those folks in the tune of $13,500, since that's the fiscal note covering the couple of individuals that will be responsible, I think, for the provisions in the bill. I think beyond that, the department does have applications on file for those individuals who have applied in the past. I think that's going to be their initial action, that is to turn to those applications, and I would imagine that they will make every honest attempt to ensure that those individuals are aware that they have the opportunity, if this bill is signed into law, to then pursue their options as far as recovering any back payment for the PFD. So, that's kind of my best guess at what they'll do. Perhaps they'll send this out registered mail. Obviously, there's going to be cases in which people have moved, people have passed on and whatnot, and those kinds of cases will, I'm sure be few and far between, but they'll have to be handled, I'm certain, within the department themselves, and they'll make that determination as to what they should do in those cases.
Further debate? Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just a question to the bill sponsor. I think many of us are aware of a unfortunate incident that was reported in the press this late last year, where the state of Alaska had to pursue apparently a military officer for 11 years to come to a final conclusion that that family was not entitled to the permanent fund dividend. And I remember a quote, if it was accurate, that somehow they should be entitled without having to bother to return to Alaska for 5 minutes or something along those lines. And my question is, and I don't assume it's the case, but I just like it on the record, that nothing in this legislation will encourage that sort of attitude of people who simply log Alaska as a home of record without any intention of ever returning.
Representative Cott?
Speaker, previous speaker is correct. There is nothing in this legislation that would undo just the kind of thing that he's addressing. I think we do have some stringent provisions in the statute right now that establishes whether or not you are clearly eligible. And those cases are dealt with within the department. In fact, if there's some debate as to whether or not they are eligible, I believe this body did take some action last year, passed a measure that required a filing fee for the department to review that particular issue. I think that probably has taken care of a lot of the problems that perhaps might be forthcoming or would have come forward. So in essence, Madam Speaker, there's nothing in the bill that, that changes the requirements for applying.
Further debate? Representative Kabina?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd just like to note that I am a co-sponsor and I support the bill. I think that there are some situations when someone, especially is ill and the spouse goes out with them, a child, it just makes no sense for them to be disallowed. I just would like to say, though, that I think every time we grant an exception to something, there's always another argument for an exception. And the alternative to actually passing this bill, in my mind, is to have no exceptions whatsoever. But I think the arguments, if we're going to have exceptions, the arguments for these people having them as good as the original ones. So I would vote for the bill, but I would also someday enjoy the discussion of not having any exceptions whatsoever.
Representative Davies?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I'm also shown, I believe, as a co-sponsor of the bill, and I intend to vote for it. I support the bill. I support the intent behind the bill. I do want to make a couple comments. Actually, following on the previous speaker, I was going to observe that there are a number of other situations where people who are equally as Alaskan as the people that we're dealing with in here are excluded from receiving the dividend for reasons that are equivalently valid. I would say that in other words, there exists a class of people that are denied the dividend who probably ought to be, you know, if we look at the list that exists, we ought to add some other items to the list. I'm not obviously going to propose that we add those to this bill, and that's always been one of the problems with this sort of bill. But Madam Speaker, I would like to just observe on the occasion that we're debating this bill that there, and I would bring to the members' attention that the director of the Permanent Fund Division also made this comment in front of Finance Committee that there exists this other list of people out there, and that at some point in the future this body ought to deal with that in a more, I believe, as the previous speaker said, either in a comprehensive way in the sense of eliminating exceptions altogether, try to have a completely bright line test, or to establish some kind of a principle on which we grant these and let the division make those determinations, which might be the preferable way. We do, I think, get into equal protection arguments about, you know, by granting some people and denying others who are, for all intents and purposes, similarly situated. So I think it is a continuing problem that we do need to address in the future. But having said that, I think that this bill, I believe, is a step in the right direction. Certainly, I agree with this instance that we should A brief comment. I did offer the amendment in Finance Committee to undo the proposed change of the word permanent to indefinite. And a colleague from downtown Fairbanks, or from Anchorage, indicated that, well, that was making it more consistent with the reference to the residency definition in Title I. While that's true, if you read further in Title I, it says that that to be a resident, you have to intend to remain indefinitely and to make big and to have your home here. And then it further states that in Section B there, that that it contemplates the possibility that other statutes will have additional requirements to the residency for the purposes of those other statutes. So the courts have found that it's perfectly consistent with that residency statute to have the permanent fund dividend statute have additional requirements, and the additional requirement in this case that I think is appropriate is that there be a slightly greater intent to be here. If you want to get a permanent fund dividend, remember the history in this, after all, Madam Speaker. We originally tried to have it depend, the amount that you got depend on how long you were here. I mean, we really, as a legislature, we do have a history and a track record of trying to say, you know, we really, by golly, mean that you're a resident and you intend to be one, and, you know, if it were up to us, you know, we wouldn't give it to you until you've been here 20 years or something like that. So, Madam Speaker, I think that the word indefinite goes too far. It's too liberal an interpretation. It means that the permanent fund dividend division is going to be giving dividends to people that really are here only temporarily. And the word indefinite in the dictionaries refer more to temporary than to permanent. Permanent doesn't mean, on the other hand, that you have to intend to die here. It just means a long time, relatively long time. And if we were to put the word permanent, as we do now, on the application, say, you know, do you intend to be here permanently, and that caused a few people not to apply, I think that'd be fine. Thank you.
Further debate?
Madam Speaker, could I have a brief at ease, please?
I'll stand briefly at ease. Further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt committee substitute for House Bill 2? I'll stand at ease. House adopt committee substitute for House Bill 2. Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
33 yeas, 0 nays.
And so the committee substitute for House Bill 2 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader, effective date?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on CS for HB 2 be considered the roll call vote on the effective date.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. House stand at ease. Representative James, just a moment, please. For the information of the new body, I mean of the new members of the body, and a reminder to all the members of the body, during a vote count, there is to be no communications, no court, no talking, no nothing. There was a little too much activity during that last vote, and we will void the rolls and not have a vote if that continues. So please keep the protocol of the vote in mind as we do the voting process. Representative James.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I request we move up the calendar to introduction of guests.
Without objection, Representative James.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In the Paratovich Gallery, I have a couple of neighbors from North Pole that I would like to introduce here today. One of them is a person who served as the Director of Agriculture in Governor Egan's term. He's a farmer, a homesteader, and also is very good at rope tricks, and that is Bill Lewis. I'd like to help you welcome him here today. And Madam Speaker, with Bill Lewis is his cousin, Lois Fields, who takes really good care of him, and I'd like to welcome her here today, too.
Representative Davies?
Madam Speaker, also in the Paratrovich Gallery, I noticed that a friend from Fairbanks and the director of the Permanent Fund Division is with us, Nancy Jones.
For their introductions, Representative Hodgins.
Yes, thank you, Madam Speaker. If you'd help me welcome a very good friend of mine and the manager of the Tesoro Refinery there in Kenai, which supplies a lot of great jobs in my district. And in fact, this person and I used to have a competition on Little League teams, and he came out on top more times than I did, unfortunately. But anyway, if you'd help me welcome Mark Necessary.
Further guests for introduction? This brings us back down the calendar. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 41 by Representative Roquefort, entitled An Act Relating to Impairment Rate Guides Used in Evaluation of Certain Workers' Compensation Claims. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered the bill.
No? Madam Clerk?
The Labor and Commerce Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 41, Labor and Commerce, with the same title. 2-0 fiscal notes were attached. The report was signed by Calgary, Sanders, Ryan, Hudson, Roquefort. The report was signed by Roquefort, Chair. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move and ask unanimous consent that the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute for HB 41 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute will be adopted. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move and ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for House Bill 41, Labor and Commerce, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we are in third reading. Would the clerk please read the title for the third and final time?
CS for House Bill 41, L&C by the House Labor and Commerce Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Impairment Rating Guides Used in Evaluation of Certain Workers' Compensation Claims.
Debate? Representative Roquefort?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This bill is not really a new idea. This body visited this issue before in a slightly different form. The lady from Anchorage, known to some as the conscience of the legislature and formerly representing District 21, shepherded this bill through this body during the last session. However, at the last minute, along with 22 of its companion bills, it was developed by the good hard work of the members of this body. Our colleagues on the other side, which last year we unfortunately used the George Lucas Star Wars type appellation of, I can't say it because it would be inappropriate. Let me just say it's the less illuminated side, felt fit not to move on 22 of these particular bills, and this particular one was one of them. The proposal before you was developed in cooperation with the Department of Labor, Department of Law, industry representatives, and other people that were concerned about this matter. Its sole purpose is to make life a little bit easier for employees, employers, and those people working in the workman's compensation business, and the board itself that administers these things. The legislation merely requires that the most recent version of the American Medical Association's Impairment Rating Guide be used and sets forth a timetable for its adoption. You know, well, why are we doing this, statutorily, you ask? That's a very fair question. Until April of last year, the state of Alaska was using the 1988 edition of the guide. And in April of last year, after over 2 years, exactly 32 months from the publication of the most recent guide, the 94 edition, we were using the outdated version. Because of the Administrative Procedures Act, all the problems that go through to adoption by regulation of various issues that come before the state. Therefore, the reason for this bill is to statutorily make it automatic, and we will avoid the regulatory process, which takes so long, and also will save the state some money. And there's a few good reasons that we should do this and adopt this measure. Matter of fact, I pointed them out in my sponsor's statement, and those reasons are so good that I'll refresh your memory. Number one, as I mentioned, the cost of adopting the regulations will be decreased. Also, the lag time will be reduced. As I mentioned, we had a 32-month period. As a matter of fact, many physicians that came into practice in the state during this lag period
when they couldn't buy the old edition, had to call the Department of Labor to try to get copies and interpretations because it was the only issue around, you know, that took so long to adopt this thing. And thirdly, the idea of new science. The latest rating guides reflect the state of medical art. As we all know, that technology is changing rapidly in this world, and medical technology is at the top of those changes, particularly new tests, treatments, and diagnostic procedures are being developed all the time. Madam Speaker, there's no fiscal note to this bill. As a matter of fact, if I would direct to the last sentence in the bill itself, and with the leave of the body, if I might read that. So the requirements of AS 44-62010, etc., do not apply to the selection or announcement of the date under this subsection. What that, you should all be very cognizant of this particular line, because what this does is it exempts this procedure from the Administrative Procedures Act. So you guys are welcome to borrow this anytime you want for other legislation. Thank you very much, and I appreciate your support, Madam Speaker.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question before the body is, shall the House adopt committee substitute for House Bill 41? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
38 yeas, 0 nays.
And so the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute for House Bill 41 has passed the House. House stand at ease.
We bring up reconsideration of House Bill 2, take it up on the same legislative day.
Without objection? Or is there objection to taking up reconsideration of House Bill 2 on the same legislative day? Without objection, that will be before us. Mr. Minority Leader, would you please make a motion to waive the reading of the title again?
so moved, Madam Speaker. It's been read twice today. I think we understand.
Is there a debate? You ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt committee's House stand at ease? The title be read again for the third time today. Madam Clerk, please read the title.
Or post-secondary education, military service, medical treatment, service in the Congress or in the Peace Corps to care for the individual's terminally ill parent, spouse, sibling, child, or stepchild for up to 220 days to settle the estate of the individual's deceased parent, spouse, sibling, child, or stepchild to care for a parent, spouse, sibling, child, or stepchild with a critical life-threatening illness whose treatment plan, as recommended by the attending physician, requires travel outside of the state for treatment at a medical specialty complex or other reasons that the Commissioner of Revenue may establish by regulations requiring for the purposes of permanent fund dividend eligibility a state resident to have the intent to remain indefinitely relating to the eligibility for 1992, 93, 94, 95, 96, and 97 permanent fund dividends of certain spouses and dependents of eligible applicants and providing for an effective date.
Is there a debate? The question before the body is the adoption of committee substitute for House Bill 2 under reconsideration. Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
38 yeas, 0 nays.
And so, committee substitute for House Bill 2 has passed the House under reconsideration. The clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar. Oh, Mr. Majority Leader, effective date clause again, please.
Madam Speaker, I would move and ask unanimous consent that whatever the effective date clause is on the passed bill be... Oh, I'm sorry, on HB2, be again considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Representative Cott.
Speaker, can we please move back up introduction of guests?
Without objection, we're under introduction of guests, Representative Cott.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In the Paratovich Gallery is a person that is certainly very important to me, as she was one of the individuals that was primarily responsible for carrying the measure that this body just passed. She is from Fairbanks, and I'm probably going to embarrass her. I'll do it anyways. Nicole Perrier, she is my legislative intern this year, so please help me welcome her.
Further guests? This brings us back down the calendar. Madam Clerk, would you read the next item on today's calendar?
We have citations on today's calendar.
Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move and ask unanimous consent that the citations on today's calendar be approved.
Without objection, the citations on today's calendar are approved. We'll stand very brief, for very brief at ease, about 2 or 3 minutes. Introduction of guests. Representative Bundy?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. If we might revert to the introduction of guests.
Without objection.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have a longtime friend and fellow dog aficionado, if you will, Dr. Jim Leach and his wife, Annie. Jim has been involved in the dog mushing business and volunteering incredible amounts of time from the days when I taught dog mushing class in the early 70s through his work with the Iditarod. Now he works with the Cusco and with the Dillingham race and is involved in the Hope race that goes from Alaska to Russia. So he's been a real fixture in the Alaska dog mushing world. He lives up in the Mat Valley and is a constituent of my colleague to roll back and to my left, who has some knowledge and information about dog mushing herself. But anyway, if the body would help me... That body would help me welcome Dr. Jim Leach and his wife, Annie.
Further guests for introduction? Operation. Representative Masick.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I feel compelled to speak about the representative from Anchorage saying I had some. Gosh, if you mean going to Nome 4 times, that's a lot. But thanks for introducing my constituents.
I figured that was coming. This brings us down the calendar to unfinished business. Representative Cott.
Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that we bring up the House Rules Committee report regarding the alleged ethics violations, case 9602 this time.
Without objection, we will have House Rules Committee findings on this ethics violation before us at this time. Representative Cott.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This body, early last week or week before, forwarded the case Ari Sanders 9602 to the House Rules Committee for consideration. After 3 intense days of listening to testimony, fettering out the issues, the facts surrounding this particular matter, I'm happy to report last night we did finally reach a conclusion, and I'd like to just at least briefly cover the report that has been made available to all members of this body. Madam Speaker, the Ethics Committee found that Representative Sanders violated AS 2460-030-A2. This statute makes it illegal to use state resources for a non-governmental purpose or for the private gain of the legislator or another person. The Rules Committee, based on the testimony and deliberations, found that Representative Sanders did not...
Your point, Representative Barnes?
My point is that we must not use other members' names on the floor. I think he can use the case number or the district from which the representative is from, but not names.
Thank you, Representative Barnes. House stand at ease. And Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would just like to note that the previous speaker is correct. The case before us makes it extremely difficult, since the name of the individual representative is in the title of the consideration, to not, from that standpoint, mention that name. Minority Leader and I have discussed this point, and we both have agreed that our members will endeavor not to use the name during the debate of the issue, but it's hard to avoid it during the description of the time.
Representative Cott, will you continue your introduction, please?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I appreciate the liberty that's been afforded to me. As I mentioned, Madam Speaker, the Rules Committee found that Representative Sanders did not have a non-governmental purpose in mind. He had a legitimate governmental purpose, and that was to encourage his constituents to continue participating in the public process. The Rules Committee also rejected the Ethics Committee conclusion that Representative Sanders realized a private benefit. Specifically, the Rules Committee did not find it convincing that the supposed private benefit consisted of campaign goodwill. There was no campaign goodwill. There was no campaign that the goodwill could be attached to. And Madam Speaker, simply this campaign goodwill really doesn't apply in this particular case. I think in almost every case, as members of this body, you can make an argument every time we do something, there's supposedly or attached to it campaign goodwill. Finally, Madam Speaker, the Rules Committee rejected the finding that a private party realized goodwill. Thus, the Rules Committee found, regarding the first violation, that there was no violation of 2460.030A2. Regarding the second charge, Madam Speaker, the Ethics Committee found that my colleague from District 19 violated AS 2460.030A5 on the theory that he used state resources for the purpose of campaigning. Again, after extensive deliberation and hearing the testimony, the Rules Committee determined that there was no campaign and that the letter that was sent was not sent out for the purpose of campaigning. It was, again, to encourage participation and showing of appreciation for what they had actually done. Hence, the Rules Committee found that my colleague from District 19 did not violate Alaska Statute 2460.030A5. Regarding the third allegation, Madam Speaker, the Ethics Committee found that Representative Sanders violated 2460.030B on the theory that he required his staff to engage in political party activities or campaigning. The Rules Committee, as I previously mentioned, does not agree that the letter was a political party activity or a form of campaigning, and thus there was no violation of AS 2460.030B. However, the Rules Committee did address the issue of cooperation and did agree that Representative Sanders didn't fully cooperate with the Ethics Committee. I think that was apparent. The question that we had before us that certainly warranted discussion and was given a thorough review was whether or not it was justifiable. And it was the opinion of the majority members on the Rules Committee that there was some unwillingness to cooperate that was not justifiable. And as a result of that, there were some sanctions that were recommended to this body for consideration. Those sanctions are, number one, there is to be a $1,000 fine paid to LAA by the end of this legislative session. Number two, that Representative Sanders would be prohibited from traveling out of state using state monies this year. Number three, that he is required to take the non-accountable method insofar as taking his office allowance account versus the accountable one that is retained down in LAA. Number four, that he attends ethics training, the classes that are formally offered by the Ethics Committee. And number five, that he post in his office a copy of the Ethics Act. Madam Speaker, the Rules Committee looked over the various sanctions that were suggested by the Ethics Committee, and it's our opinion that many of the sanctions were not appropriate since they were directly in correlation with the alleged violation. Since there was no violation, there was no nexus that connected the concepts. So, Madam Speaker, it is my recommendation that the full House accept the amended sanctions as they are provided by the Rules Committee. Finally, Madam Speaker, the Rules Committee does not find that the Ethics Committee or any of its members acted less than honorably. Certainly, we have the opportunity to to review the issues as provided for in statute, and certainly it is our prerogative to disagree with their findings, and that is exactly what occurred. And of course, we had the privilege of having the full story, in which they did not. So, Madam Speaker, I'm fully confident that based on the facts surrounding the case, the Rules Committee, or the Ethics Committee, did act responsibly with what they had to work with. Unfortunately, they didn't have the entire picture. We did. And based on having all the information, all the facts, I believe that the House Rules Committee has reached a conclusion that is certainly within reason, and I believe is the right conclusion. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Could we have a brief at ease?
I'll stand at ease. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. It is my intent now to make a couple of motions on this issue, and I would, with the leave of the body, like to explain the intent of the two motions so as not to mislead anyone as to what is coming.
Without objection, you do have the leave of the body to explain what you're going to do before you do it.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The discussion and concerns as they unfolded in front of the Rules Committee seemed to put this issue into two camps. One, the decision of the Rules Committee, the majority of the Rules Committee, to not sustain the findings of the Ethics Committee as relates to their charges 1, 2, and 3. As described by the Rules Chair. That was one consideration, and that was debated. The second consideration was the determination that the finding by the Ethics Committee of a lack of cooperation on the part of the representative was sustained, and we, the Rules Committee, unanimously, I believe, recommended that determination be sustained and that the sanctions as recommended by the Ethics, Rules Committee, be adopted. It is my intention then to move that we adopt the recommendations of the Rules Committee as to the charges in one motion, and we can debate that. And then preceding that vote, I will make a motion on the adoption of the findings of the lack of cooperation and the sanctions.
Mr. Majority Leader, would you care to make the first motion at this time?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. With that in mind, I would move that the House accept the conclusions of law reached by the Rules Committee as articulated on pages 5, 6, 7, and 8 of the Rules Committee report.
There is objection. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Specifically to the motion.
Madam Speaker, actually, I would move that we postpone consideration of that motion to the next legislative day. And if you'd like me to speak to that, I'll do that.
Is there objection to the motion to postpone? There is objection. Call for the question. Motion before us is to postpone adoption of the findings of the Rules Committee regarding Ethics Committee decision on H-9602 until the next legislative date. Mr. Majority Leader.
May I speak brief at ease?
I'll stand at ease. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, the reason for my motion to postpone is that most members received the report of the Rules Committee only this morning, an hour before we were scheduled to meet at 10. And in fact, I received it after 9 o'clock this morning, so that gave me less than an hour to review the report. I had scheduled a meeting during that period of time, and so actually I had very little time to read this. Secondly, we only received the minority report from the Rules Committee as we sat down at the meeting. So, Madam Speaker, I think on an issue of this importance that members should be afforded at least one day to review the materials that we're voting on and to consider the recommendations, and so that we can make a well-informed vote. So.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. While I agree that things have moved fast in the last day, the issues that we are being asked to consider with the two motions that I described have been out there for a long time. The desire of the public and most members of this body, I felt, to get this concluded as soon as possible, I think drives my position of opposing the motion and reminding members that this is a movement of a action as opposed to a substantive motion and is a procedural vote.
Ready for the question? Representative Kemplin?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. As someone who's just a freshman in this body, I've spent the past few weeks trying to learn as much as I can about a lot of different issues. And I guess that I'm trying to get a handle on this issue.
Representative Kemplin, I must remind you that your comments must be only to the issue of postponing this work until tomorrow.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'm coming to that. Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. The the problem is that I've just not been able to get a firm grip on this entire issue, and I need more information. No, not more. I think I have enough information. I just need time to reasonably evaluate what's before me so that I can vote in an appropriate fashion. Anyway, thank you, Ms.
Ready for the question? The question being, shall the House delay action on this issue until the next legislative day? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
12 yeas, 26 nays.
And so the motion to delay has failed to pass the House. The question before us, then, is the adoption of the findings of the Rules Committee regarding Ethics Committee Decision H-96-02. Representative Elton on the issue of the laying the minority report on the table.
Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, the member, our colleague from District 29, just alluded to the fact that something was distributed to all the members at the beginning of the session. I'd like to note, and I appreciate the comments from the House Rules Chair, this was not a unanimous decision at the, at the House Rules Committee level. The report that is in front of the body suggests the reasoning behind the non-prevailing view, and I'd like to have it included as part of the record.
Thank you. Under debate on the question of adoption of the findings, Representative Kabina, Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, today is an uncomfortable day for me, and I believe a number of people, all of us actually, sitting here, because we have rules of decorum that make it so that we don't get personal about issues. But yet this is an issue that's very personal, but because we're dealing with the ethics of one of our members. And, Madam Speaker, that member is a friend of mine and will continue to be a friend of mine after today. Madam Speaker, I think one of the problems that many of us have right now is the issue of whether the member from District 19 violated an ethics statute. Even technically, has got blown out of proportion because of the way the debate has gone, especially in the last 2 weeks. And, Madam Speaker, I think that we all find out that when we use the newspapers to make our arguments, that they get interpreted in ways and everybody joins in, and I don't think it always benefits us. I have tried, and I have recommended to members of my caucus, that we don't use the newspaper to argue this point. But, Madam Speaker, I guess there's two issues that I would like to talk about why this whole thing is very difficult for us. One is the member that has been charged in 19's arguments and debates in the newspapers that I feel have been somewhat slanderous, somewhat, stoking the fire, not trying to get us to a solution, but yet causing all of us great heartburn from what is said. Statements that we have talked about before, statements that the Ethics Committee has talked about, statements that Madam Speaker continued today in the paper of talking about the criminals on the Ethics Committee. And while we're trying to look at one small thing about whether the ethics, a violation has happened on the Ethics Committee, all these other peripherals have been out there hitting us. And so it's very hard to separate that one small question. So, Madam Speaker, I believe the member from District 19 has helped exacerbate the problem tremendously. I have personally asked that we not do this, that we keep our comments to the official procedure, that we not call people names. But, Madam Speaker, it went one step farther, I believe, within the process that went along with the Rules Committee. We, as a minority, did not object to this going to the Rules Committee. And, Madam Speaker, I believe that was appropriate because it is us, as legislators, that have to make this decision ourselves. The problem, the part that bothered me on the Rules Committee is that this discussion of attacking the judge, so to say, the members of the Ethics Committee, continued in the Rules Committee. And I think that was a mistake on the part of the majority. And I regretted that the Rules Chairman allowed that to happen because, again, I believe that took us off subject to where we should have been, dealing with this small question of, did the member from District 19 violate the Ethics Committee? And so I think that that has, again, caused this to be blown out of shape far bigger than what it was and made me personally to be embarrassed about the tack that we were taking as a body. I think that there was a violation of the ethics law, but I also think it was quite minor and maybe could be termed a more as technical. And so I will vote against this decision, and I will vote that there was a violation. But again, I'd say, Madam Speaker, that I think it is minor, and the other things that have happened and been said have caused more problems. Madam Speaker, I've counseled our members to not talk. There are a lot of, I think there are people in my caucus that have things to say, and I think today is the appropriate time for them to be said under debate of this decision. And so I hope that you will grant them the leeway to do so and that we can make a decision and tomorrow go on with the business of the body.
Thank you. Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I watched the Rules Committee proceedings via gavel to gavel. I don't believe that I missed any portion of it. I wanted very much to understand from the perspective of not only the Rules Committee but the Ethics Committee how we were at the place that we were. And Madam Speaker, in that vein, I have also asked for an opinion from our legal services on separate sections of the question that is before us. Madam Speaker, I would like to first address the remark by the Minority Leader that in some way the Rules Committee should never have allowed the discussion of Representative Sanders' state of mind. And his state of mind, I believe, went to the question of whether or not there were Ethics Committee members that were, quote, out to get him. Madam Speaker, every human being on the face of this earth have a right to a state of mind. And based upon that state of mind, we act in one manner or another. We have discussed the previous proceedings against the representative from District 19. And in discussing those previous pleadings before the Ethics Committee, I think we must note what they were and how they came about, which caused a state of mind in this representative from District 19. Madam Speaker, I believe that what I saw before the Rules Committee was a motion by the representative to go into executive session to discuss what was his state of mind. there was objections to that being taken up in an executive session. And so therefore, the Rules Committee, at its wisdom, allowed those proceedings to take place in public. Doesn't matter whether we agree or disagree with what was said in those pleadings before the Rules Committee. The facts are they went to a portion of the complaint against this representative. That portion of the complaint dealing with the representative's right to cooperate or not to cooperate. I recognize that it says very clearly in the law that you must cooperate, or when it lays out the findings, it also lays out a section of the law that says, or to take into consideration the cooperation of the legislator. Madam Speaker, I ask the leave of the body to read one small line from an opinion that I have from our legislative legal services.
You have the permission, Representative Barnes?
Thank you. Madam Speaker, under AS 24-60-170I, a person who has been charged by the committee after a finding by the committee that probable cause exists that the ethics code was violated may engage in discovery in a manner consistent with the rules of Alaska civil procedure. So I believe that what this representative did, that he asked through his attorney for discovery under the law through Alaska's code of civil procedure, which the attorneys that are represented on this floor know quite well what that is. Under this statute, a person may be charged by the committee has a right to engage in discovery to the same extent that he or she would in a civil trial, but the committee may impose reasonable limits on the exercise of that right. The committee has an obligation to respond to a reasonable discovery request made in a timely manner. I believe that a portion of these charges against the representatives for not cooperating and delaying relate directly to the Alaska Rules of Civil Procedure that allows for discovery that was not presented to his attorney. And I listened carefully to that portion so that I would have some understanding as to why the committee did not allow for the discovery as raised by the attorney for the representative. I believe instead that the committee looked in a lot of cases and which went again to his state of mind, and it was so testified before the Rules Committee, if what I heard was correct, that his state of mind was also caused to be expanded negatively toward the Ethics Committee because they did not have hearings in a timely manner. The testimony was that the members of the Ethics Committee's time schedule, their vacation schedule, and others were such that not only did they not allow for discovery as they should have, but they did not set an agenda whereby that it would not have been thrown into the time of an election, which again added to, in my opinion of what I heard, the frame of mind of this representative. Madam Speaker, I also ask that I be given an opinion on whether a legislator has a right to refuse to incriminate themselves during an ethics hearing. Again, with the leave of the body, I would read a sentence.
You have permission?
The committee noted in its decision that although the committee is permitted as a matter of law to draw inference from their doing so, it did not do so in making its findings or reaching its decision. And that is going to the question of this representative taking the Fifth Amendment. So they did not take into consideration in their findings that he delayed or was non-responsive to the committee. But yet, a portion of what's before us today goes beyond that which the Ethics Committee found. And Madam Speaker, the other thing that has troubled me greatly is the question of the legislator's office allowance. Madam Speaker, I would like you to visualize in your mind dividing this body in half, right down the middle, 20 on one side and 20 on the other side, and each of the 60 or each of the 40 getting $6,000 of public money. It is a matter of law. The statute is under AS 2410-110. That speaks to the office allowance of each legislator. Again, dividing it right down the middle, this half having taken the office allowance and that half not having taken it and left it with legislative affairs. Now, Madam Speaker, that's the same pool of money. It is state money given to us to serve our constituents. I personally took mine and paid the taxes on it, but after having said that, let me quickly add that I keep receipts for everything that I spend the money for, and so as a consequence, I file with the IRS, and just like the representatives on that side of the building, I end up not paying taxes on that money because I have kept my receipts. So the tax issue is one that you cannot use in a compelling argument before this body. So we all get our money from the same account. And what does the law say? Not somebody's interpretation. What does the law say about that $6,000? Again, if I could quote. Under AS 2410-110, the office allowance may be used, in quotations, for postage, stationery, stenographic services, and other expenses. Now, that law does not say, once again, whether you take it or whether you leave it with legislative affairs. That's what the law says. Now, Ledge Council did say that we could have two separate kinds, the accountable kind and the non-accountable kind. But that isn't what the law says. The law says that the $6,000 is to be treated just as stated here, for stenographic services, other things, and other expenses as noted. So we have one representative in this body who chose because he felt that he would have more money available to him for use on his constituent services with legislative affairs, the whole $6,000, and I took mine because I didn't figure it was anybody's business if I wanted to send flowers to my constituent since it says other expenses. For helping me with a project, let's say a piece of legislation. I frequently have constituents that do that. And if I want to send them flowers for that, I felt that was my business. But that is also an expense that I write off when I file my tax return because it is an item that is deductible for a legitimate legislative purpose. So this representative is accused, stood accused, of using his legislative $6,000 differently than I'm allowed to use mine, yet it came from the same pool of money. There has to be something basically very, very wrong with that. Now, Madam Speaker, I believe that I have a right as a legislator to write to my constituents any kind of a letter that I feel in my mind serves a public purpose. And if that public purpose is to ask them to be more civically inclined, that is, in my mind, the right and proper thing to do. Frequently, since I have been in this legislature, and I am the second oldest member here, and one of the first things I learned is you always encourage the public to participate in the public process and the public debate. So consequently, one of the first things I learned to do was get a list of everyone that attended teleconferences and write them a letter and thank them for participating in that public process. If they attended a community council, I got a list, sent them a letter for thanking them for participating in that public process. Because it does require an effort on the part of your constituents to participate in the public process. It does require an effort, whether you be Democrat, Republican, or something else, to go to your precinct or district caucuses. And we are a political body. We are elected politically from political parties. There is not at this time anybody on this floor that is not identified as either a Republican or a Democrat. There has been in the past some that were either Libertarian or party unknown. But in this instance, we are all from two separate political parties. And it is in the interest of the people of the state of Alaska to see to it that our constituents are informed and are involved in the political process because we are elected to represent them. If, for example, the Democrat Party or any other party had sent me a list of people who had attended the Democrat precinct caucuses, I would have been more than happy to have sent them a letter. I never distinguish between whether I'm sending a letter congratulating Democrats or Republicans. And I will say this about this business of sending letters. During the legislative, or during the campaign this fall, I'm sure that most everybody that was elected on this floor got some labels from the University of Alaska for people that were graduating the university that lived in their district. And I'd be willing to bet that if you got the label, you sent a letter congratulating them on furthering their education. I did, Madam Speaker. And to the letter that went to the representative from District 19's constituents, you have heard it said that there were 11 people that sent one of those letters. Ladies and gentlemen, I sent one of those letters. My letter said, thank you for participating in the public process. Thank you for being involved enough to come out on a cold, chilly night to bring national attention and national acclaim to the state of Alaska. And because people turned out and brought that national acclaim, the amount of national publicity we got, you could not pay for if your life depended on it. Because every time one of those national candidates that came here stood before the American public, they talked about Alaska over and over and over as being the one that had the first presidential straw poll, primary, or what have you. So we got thousands and thousands of dollars of free publicity for that. Now, the difference in me and the representative from District 19, I took my $4,400 or whatever it was in taxes after the taxes was taken. The other representative did not. Now, Madam Speaker, that money came from the same place. That money came from the state of Alaska for constituent services. And if tomorrow, because I have a lot of Democrat support, and I know that, and I have a lot of independent support, if somebody sent me a letter saying that here's a list of people from the Democrat Party that attended the precinct caucuses, Madam Speaker, I would send them a letter thanking them for participating in the public process, and I would hope every other member of this body would as well. It is a sorry day when we have reached a point that one member of this body drawing an expense allowance is treated differently because they chose to leave it down at Legislative Affairs or the one that took it. Remember, Madam Speaker, that the law says, very clear on its face, and I would quote again, under AS 2410, the office allowance may be used for postage, stationery, stenographic services, and other expenses. Let's talk for a moment about the stationery. Madam Speaker, when you buy that stationery, it becomes your property because that $6,000 was given to you to buy that stationery, and you're the one that eventually is going to pay the taxes or account to the IRS for that stationery. So it belongs to you. And you can do whatever you want to with that stationery once you buy it. It has been that way ever since I have been in this body. Now, who's going to know whether I take that stationery and shred it into little pieces and throw it in the garbage can? It is still mine to do what I want to with it. And I feel that the day that we get to the point where we are held up to ridicule for doing that which we are elected to do, to represent our constituents, is a sad day indeed. Now, Madam Speaker, when the original ethics bill that this one was an outgrowth of was first introduced, there was a gentleman hired from California, and his name was Josephson, from the Josephson Institute, to write us an ethics bill. Madam Speaker, that was the most appalling piece of legislation that I have ever seen. I went before the other body and testified against it, and here's why. Frequently, our constituents come to us with problems, and they expect us to address those problems when they bring them to us. And in that bill, there were two pages of adjectives of things that we as legislators could not do. And this is the example I chose to use then, and I choose to use now because everybody can identify it with it. If you had a constituent, Madam Speaker, that applied for a permanent fund dividend, they were due a public fund, a permanent fund dividend, and for whatever reason they didn't receive one, and they then appeal that to the department.